Hello, podcast world. Welcome to episode 128 of Run Chats with Ron Runs NYC. This is the Boston Marathon episode. This one's dedicated to anyone getting ready to line up this coming Marathon Monday, or if it's just on your radar and you just haven't been able to get there yet, either via qualifications or maybe connecting with the right charity, but you know it's out there for you and you want to run it one day. This is your episode dedicated to you. My good friend Brendan O'Leary, the coach of O'Leary Racing Team, a six-time finisher of Boston with a 2:29 PR, joined me. And my credentials are I'm a 10-time finisher, and I've got a PR in the course of 2:41 all the way back in the 100th Boston in 1996. Some of you may have been in grade school back then, but it just goes to show you if you stick around long enough, you can be involved with a great race like this and continue to get wonderful enjoyment out of it. So Brendan and I tackled everything, starting with the expo, logistics, race event weekend, things to do, things not to do. But most importantly, we covered the course. Brendan has one of the most comprehensive guides out there. I've linked up to him to my stories a bunch of times. It literally covers mile 1 through mile 26. It hits the elevation in every single mile. He gives you his advice, and I also shared mine as well in terms of like how to approach the course, how to tackle it, where are key landmarks you could focus in on, where do the aid stations start, what's at the aid stations, you know, the slope of the road, should you run in the middle, the right, the left, you name it, we covered it in terms of strategy, how to pace it, how to fuel, and most importantly, how to really prepare yourself to have something left when you turn right at that firehouse at 17 plus miles and get ready to tackle the chain of Newton Hills. So we had a lot of fun. We had an interested audience that were throwing us questions on the course, and we answered a bunch and then also had some back to the IG Live. So I hope y'all enjoy this listen. And I hope if it's your first Boston that maybe Brendan or I answered a question or two that was in the back of your mind, and maybe it helps you somehow, some way this weekend, and you have your absolute best Marathon Monday. I'm rooting for everybody to have a great race. I hope I see a bunch of you up there this weekend, and it's just, it's awesome. So let's just have the best damn time on Marathon Monday. Marathon Boston number 128. Amazing Marathon number 128. I'll see you all up there, my friends. Keep lacing them up. Keep getting out the door. Always remember to stay in the fight, my friends. Hey, Brendan.
How's it going, Ron?
It's going great. Appreciate you taking some time out in the middle of the day here. And for anybody who's logging in below, I see some people joining. Usually I wave, but it's a little bit of a reach to hit that button on my phone. For everybody joining, Brendan O'Leary is not only an amazing runner himself, a six-time finisher of Boston, 2:29.18 Boston PR. He's finished in the top 100 in all of his races there, but as high as I think 38th was your best finish in the men's overall. Hopefully I got that correct, Brendan. Yeah. So you got a great history on the course, not only as a runner, but also coaching runners. You've written one of the, I think, the most informative guides out there that take you through the course. A lot of these course guides that are written tend to focus on, you know, big blocks, 5K, 10K. Yours is literally mile one all the way through mile 26. So I don't know that we're going to literally dive into it at that level, but we definitely want to get into the larger chunks of it as the race unfolds. Knowing first off that some of the people that might be logging in and joining us today, it literally might be their first Boston. It could be their very first one. And I'm sure there'll be people joining who are veterans like us. From my own experience, this is my 11th Boston. I have a 2:41 PR from the 100th Boston. So fun fact for everybody at home, and I'm sure Brendan knows this. I think he knows this, but this is actually the 100th race starting with the Hopkinton start. 100th race. So yes, it's the 128th race, but the 100th time actually, you know, starting out on this course. So super, super, super fun. So we got people rolling in, and we know how this works. So even if you catch this a couple of days after the fact, the video,
The IG Live will remain up. And also, we're going to flip this into a pod episode. I don't know how long it'll take to get out, but it will definitely get out at least a few days before the race, maybe even a week before the race. So anybody who prefers listening to it in audio format, you'll be able to do that. And please, I have my phone over there. I have my iPad over here, which has the course guide and Brendan's information up. So if you're joining and you have specific questions, please, that's what my goal is. And hopefully either Brendan would be able to, or I'll be able to answer from our years of experience in running. But basically, you know, we always have to put our foot in the ground and plant somewhere. So do we want to just deal with the course itself, or should we talk a little bit about race morning and the weekend first? Because I always feel like, sure, the course is the course, right? And everyone is going to be nervous about the course, but we all know that the weekend has become a whole event. You know, back when we first started and we were running this race, you know, we didn't even have iPhones. You know, we showed up, we got our bibs, you know, we had to figure out how we were going to get out there in the yellow bus or whatever. But that was basically it. I mean, we ran into people by accident. Nothing was planned. There were no pop-up stores. Tracksmith didn't exist. None of this existed. I mean, and really the amazing thing that made Boston amazing is just the best runners. You knew they were going to be there. The best men, the best women, the best wheelchair racers, the best category, masters runners, age groupers, whatever you want to call it. They're all going to be there. So you had a chance to kind of test your mettle and line up against the best people. But now it's kind of just become this like literally whole event, whole weekend filled with talks, live shows, multitude of shakeout runs, appearances. And some of that is amazing and fun. But for you, not only as a terrific runner, but as a coach, what are some things that you might just like caution people on as they approach this weekend, particularly anybody that might be tuning in? This is their first Boston weekend and they haven't been up there before.
I would say try not doing too much because there's so much you could do if you try to get into everything. You're probably just going to be totally exhausted by the time the race comes around. So try to pick a couple things that you want to do and not everything that they advertise, because there is a lot.
Yeah, that's great advice for everybody. You know, you do have to pick and choose your spots. If you're dying to meet Tommy Rives, and I certainly understand why that might be important to you. You know, he's doing a shakeout run and like an appearance and probably like a little bit of talk and a meet and greet from 5 to 8 on Sunday, I'm pretty sure. There's, as we said, a multitude of things. So I'll give my little plug for O'Leary Racing Team since Brendan joined me. Come to Brendan's shakeout. You know, I'll be there. So if you want to meet me and hang with me, my primary job at all these shakeouts is just always to make sure people are laughing and having some fun. And I will always make sure that we're getting some great selfies and some great videos and put together a reel that highlights our fun experience. So Brendan, what time is yours starting this year? I know you moved it. So just throw it out there first and we'll start there.
We're going to go 8:30 Sunday morning right outside the Nike Town store. So it's right by the Copley T station. It's a little easier to get to for everyone.
Perfect. Cool. So 8:30, we're probably going to run, what, basically around 5K, something like that.
Yeah, 2.5 or 3 miles, whatever it comes out to.
And it's super casual for anybody that hasn't joined that group run before. I mean, we take as many selfies and do as many pit stops for that as we do, get some runs. And, you know, that's the primary focus, just to get a bunch of good shots, get people together, get people relaxed. But most importantly, even though we're goofing off and having some fun, I mean, I know what helped. It makes me feel great over the years. If I get a question from somebody that's out there that's nervous, it just makes you feel good to be like, no, you're going to be okay. Here's what's going to happen. Because trust me, between Brendan and myself or some of the other veteran runners, we've kind of seen it all and done it all. So it'd be pretty rare for you to hit us with a question we wouldn't be able to answer. So that's great advice on the weekend. Same thing myself. I mean, figure out when you're going to go get your number. That's probably the one thing that we all have to do, right? You got to go get your number. So figure that out. And, you know, don't spend 6 hours at the expo. You could do it very easily. You could spend 6 hours at the expo and never leave and be trapped there, you know, like you're in a time warp. But, you know, get in there. I'm not saying get in and get out. Hang out. Meet people you want to meet from Instagram or Facebook or your running club or whoever you're running with. Maybe you're running with a charity team. Meet your friends. See people. Get some photos. Buy your merch. And then, you know, get out of there. Do your thing. And then as far as we'll take it from there, like race morning, there's a lot of ways to approach it. Obviously, we have the yellow buses, right, that are staged, you know, and that we all have the opportunity to take. But there's a multitude of other ways now. There's a lot of private buses being used. marathon tours as private buses. I'm a member of the Unicorn Club because this is my 11th Boston. I know different running teams that you're experienced with, Brendan, that you know from the Massachusetts area. They organize them and do it. So do you have a preference on that? Do you really care or no?
Really don't care. But if it's a bad morning, the private bus is the way to go. It's worth the extra money if you can do it, because you just stay on the bus, stay warm, have the bathroom right there. So it's just a way to, that's a little simpler than taking the yellow school bus, even though those are, I took the school bus every time though.
Yeah, the yellow school buses are great. And even they can get lost once in a while. We've all seen some horror stories pop up on Instagram. But either way, even if it happens, you might as well just throw it out there right now. Even if it happens and you miss your wave and you're a red bib and you're wave one, you know, you're going to be okay. You're going to have to weave around more people or whatever at the start, but that may not be the worst thing that ever happened to you. You know, getting out, you know, early and being in a super competitive field. If you're a type A runner and that course is so fast early on and you've never run it before, it'd be very easy to be way out over your skis, to be a good 30, even 45 seconds a mile faster than what you're actually planning to run. So I think one of the first things we always talk about is just, if you haven't run this kind of course before, it'd be very easy to not realize just how quick it can be and how easy it is to carry speed early. And you could blink, Brendan, as you know, and many athletes you've coached. And I guarantee you, you've seen some of their splits at 10K and been like, you know, emoji eyes, like, uh-oh, what's happening here? So what you really want to look at is, and we'll just start with your guide. And I'll put a link in my Instagram stories to Brendan's guide, because it is literally mile by mile instructions. It details how much downhill, how much uphill. And for everyone that is thinking this course is all downhill, it's not all downhill. Even early, when the net drop is huge, you're still going back up. So you're going down, 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 you're going back up. You're kind of almost feeling like you're riding on a little bit of a roller coaster. So why don't we start with just say like the first 5 miles, you know, like what's your plan? You know, you're in your corral. Like what's an approach that something you've shared with your runners, your athletes that you coach, or even for you yourself, like for, let's say, the first 5 miles of the course?
I actually look at it as the first.
Okay.
Only because five goes slightly uphill, so it's that it isn't downhill anymore. So the first four is downhill. I think, what is it, 300 foot drop or so over the first 4 miles. And you'll hear all sorts of different strategies on this. The one that drives me nuts is some people say, oh, you got to go out easy, go out slower than marathon pace. And I've even seen some say you got to go out 15, 20 seconds slower. And to me, that's just idiotic.
Yes.
if I want to say it, because it's basically downhill miles. So why run slower than your pace if it's the effort's going to be easier is what you're looking for. So I always tell my athletes, it's okay if you're a little quick, maybe 5-10 seconds per mile, but you really don't want to be anything more than that. Because just with the drop each time, I think Coros, did you see the Coros breakdown 2 years ago?
I did.
With Dez and Reed Fisher, and I think Dez was 5:40 pace for her race. She was 5:40 pace the first four, but the adjusted effort based on that was 5:50. So she's running easier than her pace, even though the time is right, because those miles are just so easy. So I try to tell people, just try to run your pace. If it's a little quick, it's okay. If the first mile is a little slow, because it will be crowded in some corrals, depending where you are, don't panic on that, because it's still probably going to be a little quicker than you think.
That's a good place for us to start. So I think a lot of the really good prescriptive coaching guides or styles or approaches to run a race, which you know all about, Brendan, are like 10, 10, 10, right?
Yeah.
It's like run the first 10 miles of the race at X, run the next 10 at Y, and run the last 10, meaning last 10K, at let's call it Z. But that works great if you're running a Chicago, a Berlin, a course that's really flat, Tokyo even, that doesn't really have a lot of hills or whatever that is going to really mess with your pace. It absolutely makes no sense whatsoever in Boston. I mean, I think the things that I always like to caution people on, and I know it's right buried in your guide, which I'll share with everybody in stories. It's easy when you're on those more extreme downhill sections, it's easy to all of a sudden not realize that you've opened up your stride a lot more, okay? Yeah. And you're actually overstriding. And if I could just give one word of cautionary advice, it's like, it is something you can control. It's not that hard to control. If you're actually aware of it and you're actually looking at your footfalls, and I'm not saying, hey, run with your face down where you're going to do a, a face plant and take a bunch of people out. But you can look down. You can see, am I landing midfoot? Am I getting way out over my skis and it's really opening up? Because when that's happening, you know what's happening too, Brendan. There's two things going on. A, you're basically extending that leg and muscle and putting way more, you know, pounding on the quad, right? So, and you're almost effectively braking too. So you're really not running it efficiently. So if you're over your body and centered properly and thinking about trying to land midfoot more or just accelerate your turnover to accommodate the steeper sections, because we all know what goes down in Newton Lower Falls, man, that thing's like running off a cliff, right? But we want to control, right? It's important that we don't want to get too overextended and our stride doesn't open up too much, because we end up paying a price for that later in the race, right?
Yeah. A good tip, like you mentioned, is when you're running, if you are going downhill with a slight lean forward, it brings your shoulders up, out. So it's leaning up and it brings your hips forward. That's going to naturally increase your stride a little bit, which helps you not breaking in that motion of where if you're trying to go backwards, you're going to be breaking, stressing the quads. And another good tip is if you're landing on your midfoot, you're most likely not overstriding on the downhill too, like you mentioned. So yep. If you think you're going too fast, just like you said, check your foot strike. And you're, ideally, it wants to be on the midfoot. If you land it back on your heels, it's probably taking way too big of a stride on those downhills.
Yeah, yeah. And the good news is you're going to have a lot of chances to reset. Because so you just took us through 1 through 4, take us through the next block, because it's not like we run like this, everybody. We don't go like that. You can look at an elevation chart. It might seem like that, but you're going like this more or less the entire race until you turn at the firehouse and it starts to shift to going up more, a lot more, obviously. So take us through mile 5 through what's your next section, 5 through 1?
From mile 4 out to 15, I consider that basically when you should be looking to find marathon pace. I think overall for the entire area, it's a net drop of 20 feet, I think I have. Some miles might be 10 feet up because there is a hill at 7.7 or Wendy's. There's a slight little incline. So I don't expect perfectly flat roads. This whole way, there's little bumps along the way. They're not going to bother you because they're pretty small climbs. But mentally, if you're running, you say, oh my God, there's a hill here. It might throw you off. So just mentally be ready for those. But this stretch is nothing's more than like 10, 20 feet per mile either way. So it's a good time to, if you're aiming for 3 hours, just focus on hitting 652, right in that range, and just settle down, relax, take your fluids in, and just focus on finding that rhythm. This is probably the only part of the course you can actually find a rhythm in, because for the most part, pretty straight.
Yeah. Again, great, great advice. And as far as, how I've kind of advised some people myself over the last few years with running. And, you know, Boston is not the one that most people would think of for this style of approach. But, you know, when you're running Tokyo, when you're running London or running Berlin, which are more international, kilometers are the way things are measured. I mean, you certainly get the miles in London too. But in Tokyo, you know, you're getting miles, but they're not as frequent, not as often. So I kind of just started approaching my running very differently. I turn auto lap feature off on my watch all year. It's not just for the marathons. I just never have it on. It's frankly too annoying. Another mile went by. Like, I like having it off. I split my watch every 5K. It breaks the race into 8 segments, right? It's 8 5K segments. You still have the last 2.2K to go, but it gives you an opportunity to just focus on those 5K segments versus getting hung up with every mile. And in Boston, Brendan, you can speak to this. The last thing you want to do is get hung up with every mile, because if you're trying to average 6 minutes per mile, which is what I was trying to run when I ran my 241, and that's what I did a little over 608, 609, something like that. You know, some miles are going to be 548s. Some miles are going to be 552s, but some are going to be 625 or maybe 640, even, let's say, when it comes to, you know, when you get back to, you know, going up, let's say, Heartbreak Hill. So, you know, you just have to kind of prepare yourself. I think Ryan Hall talked about this, and it's one of the reasons I really enjoy his approach to it. Is it running effort? Okay. You know, it's not about like heart rate or pace per mile. It's just running in effort. Like, let the downhills roll with them, be centered in your body, kind of lean out, you know, so you're in a good body position. But then, you know, when you get to the hills where the real race starts, you know, if you've done this race right and you train for hills and you're prepared for what this race is going to, you know, make you answer as far as an exam or a test goes, you're going to be ready when you turn at the firehouse and be able to get ready for the hills, right?
For the most part, yeah. But don't forget the 128 hill before the firehouse.
Yeah. Somebody just wrote a question in. Can you give a comparison between New York and Boston? Yeah, I mean, look, we'll take some questions. So I think the person's name was Kathy, but excuse me if I missed it, because it's very hard to kind of scroll, pay attention, be engaged with Brendan, and also just see who's like coming in. But I think Brendan and I are of the same mindset. New York is significantly harder course than Boston. Yeah. It's a tougher course in Boston. Don't let anybody tell you differently. It's not hard to figure out. Look at the world's fastest times ever by the men and the women in Boston versus New York. Obviously, Boston has 128-year history coming up this year, and New York is nowhere near that long. But trust me, when you've been around 50-plus years as New York has, you've accounted for pretty much every kind of weather and conditions, as has Boston. And, you know, it's no comparison. I mean, New York is a way harder course.
I agree wholeheartedly that it's just relentless from the start, going right uphill to the entire way, nonstop.
Yeah. And look, you know, we also have to run on concrete, not as much as we used to in New York. We got the bridges and all sorts of other things. But Boston is just different in every way. Again, whoever that sent that question along, thank you. It's just different. I mean, let's talk a little bit about some of the differences besides just the net downhills. I mean, it's intimate. It's narrow. It's much more narrow than I think people might be expecting. Yeah. It's not claustrophobic narrow, but it's not a wide street. And the crazy thing, and I don't think people really get this, you don't turn until, is the firehouse 17.8 or 17.7, something like that?
16 and change.
16.
Right at 17.
16 and change, 17. I thought it was 17, but either way, but imagine running 17 miles without making a turn. I mean, we don't make a turn.
17.3.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I mean, it's wild, right? So we are running, you know, for the most part on this narrow road. And this might be a good time to throw in like aid stations, right? Because I know you know every bit about this again. Mile two is where our aid stations start. First one pops up on the right side. Second one, I think, is maybe what, about 100 feet up on the left, right? And is the order water first, Gatorade, if I remember? Because I think it's water first and Gatorade. And I think, Brendan, you share a tip that I happen to think is a wonderful tip. You're like, don't bother trying to get over to the right for that first station, because it's only another 100 feet over on the left. And I think some really good advice is, you know, just think about where you want to run. Do you want to run on the right side of the road? Do you want to run on the left side of the road? Do you want to run towards the middle? Like, just think about that a little bit, because, you know, once that race starts, the rareness of this race is you can basically kind of stay in your own lane. I caution people against going all the way right or all the way left, because you tend to get people running really fast that are trying to make up from a corral they're starting in. And you don't want to get that feeling like this dude or chick just came up and nearly ran me over. Like, that could be a little scary. So pick a side, you know, and again, when I say right side, I don't mean against the edge of the road. Just, you know, the road does have a curve, as Brendan knows, right? So we get a little bit of a pitch to the road. So if you're up near the middle more, you're kind of in a flatter section as you get towards the further right or left. Like any road, it's for drainage, right? It's going to pitch off a little more to the right or to the left. So pick a side. And then as far as your aid station goes, don't worry, you're always going to have those two coming up, right? One on the right, one on the left. So you don't need to necessarily get all your aid stations on the left or on the right. You know, you could vary it just based on, for me, one of the things I always talk to runners about, if there's shade somewhere, try to find the shade even early, right? Because, you know, when you're going through these neighborhood villages and these homes, I mean, you get some pretty good tree cover early in that race, particularly before it opens up, right? So, you know, trying to find a little shade along the way, right?
And on the aid stations, just you can see them coming. So if it looks like the right-hand side is too crowded, just start just planning to go to the left. If it looks like the right's okay and you're close to the right, just go to the right. Just know what you can do. And you always have that backup plan if you miss that one too, that there's another one right upside on the left-hand side.
Absolutely.
So don't panic.
So don't panic. That's key. That's key. And, you know, like if you drop a gel, you're going to be okay. I know everybody, you know, takes great care with how much fuel they're bringing to the races these days and trying to have a plan and trying to measure this stuff. But look, the facts are you might drop your Morton gel. You might drop your Gen Ucan gel or, you know, whatever goo, whatever product or process you're using. So you're just going to have to keep moving. There's always going to be gels on the course. I think it's Morton now, right?
Yeah.
Brendan, it's Morton out on the course. So they'll have gels out in the course. Boston probably is the easiest course in the world to have people meet you multiple times if you have anyone there from a run club, friends or family, taking the tee around, getting around the course. They could be hitting you with a bottle of fluids, extra gels, or maybe even some kind of a snack, you know, that you might want to take for energy. So Nacho's in the background trying to join our IG live over here. He's like chasing his bone around. So hopefully it's not too distracting. And he's going to get to Zoomy soon. And this is going to be a classic. But so where were we on section? Where were we last?
We had just finished up the section two, which is pretty much the time to just find that rhythm. You're going to go through some iconic areas like Wellesley College, which is going to be loud. I think Wellesley Center is just as loud as Wellesley College a lot of years because it's just packed in there.
Let's talk about some of the fun landmarks because, like, I know everybody out here, we all have an approach to get through 26.2, whether it's thinking like every 5 miles, okay, that's five, you know, that's one fifth of the way done, whatever it is. Or in the case of doing 5Ks, it's like 8 blocks. For me, it's like landmarks along the way, that lake on the right, you know, the train station to the left, the church on the left, like there's landmarks and you map all that out in your guide. So how does that help a runner, Brendan, just like break the race up a little? Like if you read through your guide, which they'll have hopefully after they listen to our conversation here, and they like prepare themselves, right? It's like, hey, that's that church Brendan and Ron were talking about, or there's the lake. Okay, that's like 10 miles in. Like, how does that help you, you know, in terms of the race and managing the race?
I think it just gives you something where your mind's focused on keeping looking ahead. When's it coming? Once you hit that, then you can focus on the next one. It just keeps your mind off things. Like the church was what, Natick Town Center? That can, that's like mile 10. It gets pretty crowded there. And then you'll have Wellesley College at 13. So once you get to that Natick Town Center, that church, then you can say, there's that church he was talking about. Then focus on Wellesley College 3 miles up. Then you pass that. And you can, it just helps you break down the course a little bit.
Yeah. And it makes the time go faster, right? Because like if you're in my mind, like instead of getting so hung up on the watch and the pace, because again, with the ups and downs, your pacing might be a lot more uneven than you're used to at other races. It's not going to be even like Berlin or Chicago. New York is still more similar just because it's such a more challenging course and tough course. And similar, similarities of New York and Boston are only the pros or only the super elite are ever going to run a negative split at Boston or New York. I don't care unless you just literally just go into like first gear for the first half or first two thirds of Boston or New York. You're not running a negative split or Boston, New York. The course is just too hard. So. Yeah. And I know I've seen you talk about strategy wise. And I know when I did my 241, I think I was 119, 122. So I think 3 minutes is reasonable. Like anything more than that, you don't want to be too far apart in terms of like being a positive split. This is the one course I've heard you talk about and specifically saying, hey, it's okay to run a positive split in Boston. Yeah. You just don't want to run the wrong kind of positive split. You know, you don't want to run a 119 and a 132 or something like that, which people have done, right?
Yeah, I always tell people try to aim for about 2 minutes or so. That's if you really nail it, like 2 minutes. But like my 2:29, I was 2 minute difference. I was 1:13 and change, 1:15 and change. But my first Boston, I was 1:13 and like 1:20. I went out way too fast. So we all learn that mistake early, and it gets over time. But if you look at most of the pros, not talking like the Kenyans, because they're running 3-4 minutes off their best. They don't run fast at Boston. They're racing. But if you look at other ones, like on that Coros breakdown I mentioned of the 2022 race, Dez was a 90-second positive split, and they had the effort exactly the same throughout, according to the heart rate data. Reed Fisher, who was running for Coros, he was 2 minutes positive split, ran a PR of 2:10, and it was same thing. The data for the effort all the way through was exactly identical. So that just shows you the difference in the course. That if you're running an even effort, it's going to be a positive split.
Yes, it's such a great. It's great that the data backs it up, because Ryan Hall talked about that too. That it's effort. It's about trying to stay at an even effort. And we also know anybody who's ever run a marathon, and even if you haven't approached your best yet, maybe you're still a new runner and you still have so many more PRs ahead of you, and you're just kind of developing at this point. You're getting stronger. You're running more miles. You're starting to run PRs across all kinds of differences. This course is going to demand a lot from you in the back half of the race, which is why you'll hear so many people talk about caution and being cautious. And that doesn't mean put the brakes on, like Brendan said early. It's foolish. I mean, you have to allow the downhills to be downhills. You don't want to slow yourself down early in the race or in points. Like, I think the one part of the course that is the most scary is Newton Lower Falls, man, because that thing, it was Kathy who asked the first question. She asked to compare Boston Hills and New York Hills. We'll try to get to that because we didn't even get to the hills yet. But staying on the downhill, because that is the craziest downhill when you descend into Newton Lower Falls, right? I mean, Brendan, how steep is that bad boy? To me, I feel like I'm going down a roller coaster when we're coming down that hill. Like, how steep is that hill? And what mile? I know you know the exact miles of these points. So where are we at, like, Newton Lower Falls when we're on that descent?
So on my breakdown, I started at section 3 being 15 to 21. So you just come out of Wellesley Center, and it's roughly around mile 15 and a half, I think. It just bottoms out into Newton Lower Falls. Because the 16-mile mark, I believe, is right down in the bottom of it. It's like 100 and, what do I have from here? I think it's like a 100-foot drop, that mile, where you just go straight down. And it's steep.
It's steep. So the reason I want to really put some specific focus on that one is because everything is about to change, right? I mean, we're going to bomb down this hill. And this is not just for people who've never run Boston before. Maybe you've run Boston a bunch of times, just haven't gotten it right yet. If you're not careful there, again, with your body position and just not getting too crazy where you're literally just blowing down the hill and having, like, God knows how much extra weight on different parts of the body where it shouldn't be, and your body position isn't good. If you can keep yourself under control and get down to the bottom of that hill, you're going to be a lot better, sir, because you and I both know our least favorite hill is coming very soon. We have to cross that stupid highway, which Des Linden has said many times is her least favorite hill. So, yeah, Des, you, me, and Brendan are on that train because it's not even listed by most people who do a guide. Of course, you list it because you know it's a real hill. And it isn't just a hill, man. It's like you get the crosswinds blowing from the highway. It's kind of a desolate area, almost like in the Ironman, where you're turning around on the bike and the wind is blowing and not enough people are around to realize what you're facing. But that is a tough spot when you're climbing up that long hill on the asphalt to get to that bridge where that wind is blowing bananas before you get to the hospital. So talk us through that section a little bit.
Yeah, so you're just coming off that crazy downhill. You probably have half mile or so. And it's right at, I'm looking at my guide right here. Once you hit mile 16, you start that descent right up the highway. So you're going to have the wind coming from both sides. No matter what, it's just going to be whipping that day, even if it's not a windy day at that spot. Like you said, there's not many people there. And it's the first point in the course where you're really challenged. You're going to know whether you have it or you don't have it at this point. You're going to see people start struggling, dropping back. So that might give you a little boost. If you see some people struggling and you're doing okay, that you're getting up it. It's from 16 to 16.6. It's about a 75-foot climb, which is just as good as some of the other ones. And just coming off that downhill and the winds coming off the highway is what makes it tough. And a lot of people don't even know it's there.
They don't know it's there. And I think that's what makes it tougher is the location, because it's different where Heartbreak is packed. Most of the Newton Hills are packed and people are just cheering and encouraging you from the time you turn at the firehouse. But this is kind of desolation land where you're just kind of out being windblown. And it's just like, what is happening here? And I, from all the years of running Boston 10 other times, I think this is the spot where you're almost likely to see people walk for the first time. And look, people get injured. People come into this race injured. People are not 100% healthy, or they might be running through the charity route and they have going to be out there for 6-7 hours or even longer. So in their case, they probably had already walked already. But yeah, it's the point in the race where I notice a lot of people actually will be like, whoa, I'm going to actually walk a little bit of this climb, or I'm going to walk a little bit of this section. And that's fine, man. You got to pick and choose your battles. If you're feeling really beat up at a point like this, this, you know, it's technically kind of early, right? You still got at least 10 miles to go. It's not the place to win the battle and lose the war, right? So just marshal your energy, get through this section as bad as it can seem, and it can seem bad. I always try to focus on the hospital up on the right ahead, because that's where I feel like it levels out again, and it kind of gets you back to stable kind of running more or less. Isn't there a golf course over on the left too? So there's a golf course to the left. You have the hospital to the right, and the crowds, I think, get a lot deeper over there. So for me, I always feel like just get me out of this spot, get me out of this section, and then I'm going to be good. I'm going to be able to kind of get myself back to where I was, or at least make an effort to get back to where I was in terms of getting regulated on pace, et cetera, right?
Yeah, because after that climb, when you're talking about the hospital, you have about, it's like 8/10 of a mile of slightly down before you take the, before you approach the second hill, which we'll talk about in a minute. So you have a decent amount of time to recover, would just let the course roll for you a bit, gather yourself, take a deep breath, get your composure back, and just try to find that rhythm again. With the downhill there, heading into the firehouse, coming up at 17.3, I believe it is.
17.3, the firehouse. The first turn in the race at 17.3 miles. Amazing. It's such a cool spot. I tell people all the time, it's a great spot to have somebody meet you with a bottle or something, because I had my son and one of his friends from Regis. They ran cross country and track together at Regis, and they met me just a little bit before the turn and hit me with a bottle. And it was just such a boost of energy to see them on the course. And then, you know, you make that right. The firemen are out there. The music's blasting, the energy. It just goes through. It's a massive boost in energy when you cover that spot and you make the right. And then, you know, we get ready for my favorite word, the chain, the Newton chain of hills. Because it is a chain of hills. It isn't one hill. It's not a couple. And I think, you know, again, in ranking order, I really do think the first one is a really tough one, particularly because for the most part, we've been running down and down and back up and down and back up, which is using certain muscles, right, in our hips and leg muscles, et cetera. And now we're actually going to switch into like an actual climb where we're actually going to have to do some work for the first time, where we're not just going up like that, you know, a section across the highway. It's some real work there on that first one. So, you know, we're there. We're going to start hitting the Newton chain of hills. So why don't you talk us through that first hill, a little bit about what that's like.
That first hill, once you turn the firehouse, it's about 4/10 of a mile from 17.4 to 17.8 or so. It's right at 75 feet again. The overpass hill was 73. So it's similar, but it's not going to feel as hot. I think because the crowds are just so damn big there. So they give you a little boost. And what I always try to tell people on the hills is you'll see some people that are hammering up the hills, but let them do that. Don't be that fool, because just as we've talked about this whole podcast so far, just even effort up it, conserve your energy up the hill. And then once you're at the top of that, you're going to get a pretty decent break again of a downhill to flat where you can roll again, as long as you didn't push that uphill too hard. If you push it too hard, you're going to not be able to take advantage of that downhill and the flat stretch before the next one. So don't panic or don't worry if people are passing you up the hill. Just take a check of your systems, keep your breathing about the same as what it was in the flats. And that's how you keep an eye on what even effort is and that type of thing.
It's great advice. And I think, you know, everybody who's qualified for Boston, everybody who's part of the race, we're all coming in at different places. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of us are in peak shape, ready to run maybe an Olympic trials kind of paced speed race or a guaranteed BQ with like tons of minutes to spare. And others are not healthy or maybe coming off injury. So you can't let ego dictate how you're going to run this race. Okay. So, and even as you venture into the hills for the first time, you may have been running with a group for a pretty good section here, but as you turn and hit the hills, some people are just going to be better at hills than other. And again, that's the time to turn the ego off. It's the first. It's not, you know, it's not, this is it. You know, once you scale the first hill in Newton over here, as we make the turn at the firehouse, you're all set. No, you got a bunch coming at you, and concluding with heartbreak before you get the bomb downhill by Boston College and Cleveland Circle. And if you got anything left, you got some downhill miles in there that you can really exploit. So I think the thing is, tuck your ego away, run by effort, manage your breathing. And look, if you can find somebody that's at a similar pace, I think it's great. Personally, when I could find somebody that's like working at a similar effort to me, Brendan, and I could like work with them or off of them, I think that helps us, right? I think it breaks it up. It's like, okay, I'm with Brendan. I'm with my friend Kate over here on the left. I'm with Jim, somebody. It's like, okay, we're working together. But again, don't let the ego sink you because you've been running together. They could be stronger. They could be fitter on the hills, or they may have pushed so hard in this first hill, right? Because they want to like win the day. And then guess what? You're not going to see them again for the rest of the race.
No.
Because they may literally have blown their race up, or maybe they have an issue with their hamstring or other body parts. And all of a sudden they're off on the side of the road walking. So, you know, be smart, have a plan, you know, and just kind of check them off, right? Like just get that first one done and recover. Because if you've been doing your hill work, once you get over the top of one of these hills, it shouldn't take you that long to recover. We got pooches in the screen. I love it.
Yay. Just checking it out.
I love it. So awesome, man. That's the best. So good. But anyway, recover, you know, scale the hill, recover. And then you should be able to open it up because you got a nice section there, right? Coming off the top of that, off of that first one, right?
Yeah. I always tell people to break the hills into fours. So we're through the first two already. That takes you to like miles 17.9. And then the next stretch before the next hill doesn't start to 19.2 at Newton City Hall. So you have 1.3 miles. It's actually slightly downhill too. So you have plenty of time to recover. And if you're breaking them into four, there he is.
Nacho. Nacho joins the IG live too. Yes.
So if you're breaking them into four parts and you're focusing on the recovery between each one, that's where you can really get back onto your pace. If you took the uphills kind of easy, same effort, and then just start rolling again on that mile stretches in between. That's a good way to break it up. And I might as well tackle it now. And then that hill three, which is Newton City Hall, starts at 19.2 and it's the 19.6. Technically, it's the smallest hill on the course. It's a 68-foot gain, so it's not as bad, but it's the third out of four, and you know the big one's still coming. So it can be a little challenging, but mentally, if you tell yourself it's not as bad as the other one, I think that will get you up it. And that takes you up to 19.6 miles at that point.
Yeah. And let's break a little before we get to heartbreak, not physically break, but I think a key thing to note, again, for people that haven't run Boston a lot or maybe don't have much experience, this is easily the heaviest trafficked areas of the course that we're talking about here. There are people everywhere. If you're running on the left, the entire inside lane is packed with people cheering, throwing stuff out in the course, screaming. People will see you. They will yell your name, man. They will give you love. Over on the right side, if you're tackling it from that side, you're going to pass the Heartbreak store. And, you know, when you get to Heartbreak, obviously, which we didn't get to yet, but we're going to. So depending on what side of the road you're on, or even in the middle of the road, there are going to be massive crowds cheering you on, giving you all the positive feedback that you need. So as we like to say, the theme of the show, stay in the fight right over here. These are times to think about your mantra, your why. Yes. I don't know. Everybody takes a different approach to marathons. Do you write on your forearm? Do you write on your hand? Do you write on your arm sleeve? Like, you know, what your why is, what your mantra is, or what are some sayings that you're going to say to yourself when you get into difficult spots in this race? Because look, this race is going to challenge you. Even if you have a great day, there's going to be some points in this race where you are just not going to feel right running at the pace that you're used to, or something else. Maybe your calf is going to start twinging. Maybe a quad is going to start, you know, twinging. Maybe your foot's going to start hurting. I mean, look, it's a marathon. It's never going to be easy, no matter how fast we run this race. So whenever these things happen, just think about a little bit as you're working your way through the hills. What are your mantras? What's your why? What's your sayings or expressions that you're going to go to if you're struggling and you're in a tough spot? Like, I'm strong. I can do it. Stay in the fight. Yeah. Whatever it is, whatever works for you, just think about that to help you manage this before we get to heartbreak. Because, yeah, it's tough and it's easily the hardest hill, but so many people, we've seen how many stories, Brendan, of people say, wait, you know, we ran Heartbreak Hill. We ran it already. Like, people that have never run the course, they've scaled it and they didn't even know it. And, you know, they're through that part of the race and didn't even realize they'd actually run it, because it isn't that much different and that much worse than the other Newton Hills. It's just the longest one, right? And, you know, obviously it's the order, because you've now tackled the other ones first. And this one is like the last one waiting for you, just to give you one more beating, right?
Yeah. I think if we're getting into how to break it, where the other ones were all between 65 and 75 foot climbs, this elevation is technically a 95 foot climb. So it is a little more. About most of them are about 4/10 to half a mile. It's a half mile, so they're all about the same incline. I think the grade of it is like 3.9% from people that do it, which isn't the steepest hill in the world. I mean, most races, someone's climbed something that's a little steeper. It's just the gradual climb up it. It goes up, then there's a little flat section, then it goes up again. So there is that. So don't be fooled when you're at the top. But the second half of it is when you're approaching the college, and you might not even notice it because the college kids go absolutely berserk in that area. And then once you get to the top of it, it brings you up to 20.7 or so. And you're right through the BC campus, where I think it gets louder than Wellesley, personally. They're crazy.
Oh yeah, that's full on wild zone, and that's when the beer offers are going to start.
Yeah,
and the frat kids are out, and sorority girls, and everybody's like trying to pass you cocktails and drinks, like, hey, join the party. Like Nacho's joining the party right now. You know, basically, you know, if you control it, like you said, there is that gap before you hit the second section of heartbreak. And for like New York City runners, you know, because, you know, again, Kathy asked that question, compare the hills. Like, you can't, no hills can be accurately compared. They're not exactly the same grades. They're not exactly the same lengths. They're also, where do they fall in the race? So it's always hard to truly compare. But trust me, it is hard. It's tough, but it isn't that hard. I mean, wow. I tell people all the time, run Harlem Hill loops in Central Park, and you'll be ready for anything Boston can throw at you. Because sure, Harlem Hill is steeply uphill, that loop, but it also has huge downhills in there. So it's the exact kind of practice you want for transition, where you're going up and you're going down, you're going up and you're going down. So it's just where it falls in the race that makes it challenging. But as you said, when you get to the top of Heartbreak, and you'll know because you'll see Boston College over there on the right, you'll see the students lining the course on both sides. Like I said, I wasn't kidding about the beer and drink offers, man. Yeah. If you're ready to join them for a shot or a drink, man, you'll get some legendary footage if this isn't about time for you and you just want to get some good content, man, for your YouTube page or something. Here's your spot. Stop and do some shots with people, whatever. And, you know, once you scale that, you are going to go on a serious downhill into Cleveland Circle. And I always caution people here, Brendan, too, because people's legs, you know, this is the point where you had to find out, do you have anything left in your legs? Of course, you know, you're going to finish. You can finish as long as you're not like in some sort of serious pain or dealing with something that's broken, let's say. But I've seen this many times, and I know you have too. How many people have I seen trip going down that hill in Cleveland Circle, and not just over the train tracks because it's steep and their legs are not used to that transition again. And all of a sudden it's a steep downhill and maybe they don't have their, you know, weight underneath them enough properly anchoring them. And then, you know, I like tend to go all the way over to the left, but the tracks are over there, right? The T tracks are over there. So somebody could slip very easily, catch one of those train tracks and go down. And we don't want that to happen to anybody, right?
No. If we go back to the top of Heartbreak, like you were talking, so we're at the top at 20.7. Then once we hit 21 is that big drop. Going by, there's a cemetery that people call the Cemetery Mile. It's very quiet. It's like an 80-foot drop, but it's quiet. All of a sudden, you came from Potty Zone, BC, and this next mile is quiet because you got the T on one side, so no one's on one side of the road, and there's just not many people in this stretch. So just don't attack the downhill too much. Just let it do a little bit of work for you. Settle into your zone. And then once you get over 22, then you get that other small little drop going into Cleveland Circle that you mentioned, because that's like 22, 2, 3, somewhere around that, just over 22. And so you got that other steep drop. So you've dropped a lot in the last mile and a half. But once you get into Cleveland Circle, like you said, careful of the tracks. Just know they're there. If you're running and you're aware of them, most likely nothing will happen. So don't think you're going to fall no matter what.
Yeah. I don't want people to like panic. These aren't like railroad tracks that are like 9 feet up in the air. It's not like that at all. But if you're not paying attention, it's easy to be, you know, getting your bottle out, getting a gel out. Just, this is an area you just need to be aware of, because if you are digging into your belt to pull out a gel, or you have a pack or something and you're trying to get to a salt tablet or something that might be, and you have your eyes off the road, it wouldn't be that hard to not see it, particularly as you get all the way down towards the left where it kind of goes around the bend there in Cleveland Circle and then kind of straightens out and you eventually start the straightaway for home, where we want to wait for the sit-go sign to appear, and we keep thinking it's going to appear, but it doesn't appear for the longest time ever. And then when it does appear, you know, we still have a little more climbing and work to do. But just something to be careful of, and that's if you're on the left side, because that's where the tee, you know, runs down along the left, as Brendan said. So you don't have to run along the left side, but for me, that's kind of where I always go, and then I bank right along through. There's like a 7-Eleven over there on the left, you know, around where it angles back, and then it kind of straightens back out. So I always like, that's my angle. I've always taken that over the years. So it might be weird to just do something different after all these years, you know?
Yeah. And then once you take that, that's another term that we finally have on the course. We're taking that left again. And you're in Brookline. So it's roughly like 4 miles to go from that stage. And you just have those crazy drops. But it's a good chance to settle in. And you can see, like you said, you can see straight ahead of you for a long time. I always try to tell people, whether even if it's a good day or a bad day, just focus ahead in each mile to kill time. Not kill time, but get your mind off the pain, whatever you're going through. Just try to focus on, tell yourself you're going to catch 5 people this mile. It just helps break things up, because even if you're struggling, you'll probably pass some people, because there's going to be people walking there that are having a rough day. So, and not that we're totally going against them, but just every time you go by someone, it's going to give you a little boost. And if you set your goal, whether it's 5 people, 10 people, it just keeps your mind focused straight up on the road ahead of you.
Great advice. Because, look, everyone's going to struggle. Everyone's hurting. Hurting is a better word than struggle, because you could be hurting and still really cranking some great miles.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing, and nobody knows this better than you, running sub 230 even, is you might feel like you're running faster. You might feel like you just uncorked your fastest mile, but it still might be 15 or 20 seconds slower than what you were running before. But the effort to run that mile is costing you more, because you're just depleted, you're worn down, and you got 4 miles to go in the Boston Marathon. So that's normal. Like you said with the Kenyans, accurately before, a lot of them are running at paces that aren't even that hard of a pace for you, them in that day. The race hasn't begun for them. Like, they're not even running at their fastest pace until it gets down to the last 10K or so. So for them, you know, it's been a hard run to that point, but it hasn't been some crushing, soul crushing experience. It's like, okay, let me go run for the money. Let me see if I can win this thing based on where it is. So that last stretch, you know, it's very neighborhood. You got a lot of apartments lining there. You got a lot of trees, so it's good for shade. But it kind of gets a little quiet in there until you get a little bit closer. And, you know, I think then, as we know, like once the sit-go sign comes into view, I think that just kind of changes everything. No matter how bad you're hurting at that point, no matter how much of a struggle you might be facing, you see that sit-go sign, you know you're really closing in. So,
yeah. You first see that as you're approaching mile 24. So, and you're going to pass it around mile 25. So you'll see it in between 23, 24. All these miles are pretty much downhill too. They're all like 40 to 50 foot drops. There are some slight climbs in there, like we said earlier. So don't think it's just straight downhill and nothing else. But overall, if you're having a good day, it's giving you more than it's taken in the stretch by a lot. So you can really hammer this stretch if you're feeling good. And even if you're not feeling good, you can conserve a bad day and get the pace down a little bit again if you keep fighting for it, because it is an honest stretch where you can make up some ground again.
Yeah, so well said, because most of the people around you, I don't care if you're running 230, 330, 430, people are going to be, they're going to be struggling at the end. It's just normal. It's a marathon. And some people are going to be walking. Some people are going to be having calf cramps. Some people are going to have another stuff. It's really hard, because we feel bad for people in that state. I know I do. God forbid, I see anybody fall and hit the ground. I say so many prayers, because you don't know. Someone passed away in Tokyo. You know, when I was there, I saw them. They were trying to resuscitate him. They were there with the AFib equipment immediately and started to work on him. And, you know, we know Ryan Dame. Ryan Shea, the great runner, you know, collapsed in Central Park when the marathon trials were there, and they were working on him right away. We never know what's going to happen out there. So, you know, we don't root against anybody or have anything, but whatever mind tricks you can play, you know, if, like you said, you're catching a few people here late and you're catching more people, build on that momentum, man, because, man, the sooner you get across that line, the sooner the pain is over, man, and the hard work is over. And, you know, whatever your thing is, man, if you're into a Sam Adams or a Guinness, or if you're not even a drinker or you want to have a non-alcoholic beer, man, you'll have plenty of options to what you want to do to celebrate. But man, just keep going and checking it off. And, you know, once you really, truly get to the Sitco sign, like you said, you still have, you have that hill coming across that little bridge over by Fenway. There's a little bit of an uphill there, right, Brendan? When you're, when Fenway's kind of over on the right there and you have that bridge and Sitco sign is off to the left, right over there.
Yeah. It's right before a mile to go. You get that little bump. It's deep. Yeah. My legs always buckle there a bit, but it's 10 seconds you're up it. It's not big or anything like that, but it's, you're going to feel it. And it's, you'll probably say a few curse words there as you're getting up.
No question. A few F-bombs have been uttered by me in that section, not at any runner around me, but just like under your breath, sometimes out loud. And God knows, sometimes you think you're saying it to yourself and you're actually saying it out loud, but and then the last thing, obviously, we have to deal with is after we get by the Sitco sign, you know, we go down that stupid ramp, and that's when we truly have our last hill. You know, when we go down the ramp and, you know, we have to kind of come and pop back up.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like it's even an elevation in the guide or anything, but it hurts, man. I don't know about you, but it hurts. You know it hurts, right?
Yeah, there's that. Basically, just another, like, under the bridge up. It's, again, like 10 seconds, but... it's things where your legs are basically on empty at that stage. I don't know where exactly it is, 25.43, maybe 25 and a half, because it's like a half mile straight away at the end.
Yes, it is, Craig. That's what I just mentioned right now. Craig just is writing, don't forget to dip under Commonwealth Avenue before you turn right into Hereford. And our buddy John Hadcock gave us a hello, a shout out down below as well. So yeah, I mean, it's painful over the years. I've never been a fan of that spot. But it's just like, I'm just trying to make eye contact with all the people that have lined, you know, Hereford, that you're just like, can I get on that street? Because if I can get onto Hereford, then I can get over there to make the left and we can get onto Boylston. And I don't care how many times we measured it. This is, you know, going back to anybody that ever asks questions and tries to compare thing. It's like you can run in Central Park every single day of your life. You can run from Columbus Circle to Tavern on the Green and not even really feel that that's a hill. It doesn't even exist. But trust me, on race day, it's a real hill. Yeah. It exists. And same thing goes, Fifth Avenue in New York in the marathon late. Fifth Avenue has broken a ton of pro runners, as well as top amateurs, top age group runners. It's just broken them because it's where things fall. It isn't just so much about the elevation all the time. And, you know, that last one, as Craig is talking about for me, that last one has really, it's been a kick in the you-know-what too many times. But, you know, once you get surrounded by those people, again, in the narrowness of these streets, man, in Hereford, it's just like these people are everywhere, man. Yeah. And I just tell people, if you're not working the crowd, you're not running this race the right way. And I'm not saying don't go for a PR. Don't try to run your fastest time ever. Don't try to run your fastest Boston. Don't try to run a BQ, you know, and beat your time you've ever beaten. But man, look at those crowds, man. Engage those people, man. Wave to them. Get your arms going. You know, take your phone out, man. Get a video, get a selfie. I get these people in frame and these people go bananas, man. They start screaming and go nuts. And it's like, you know what? All of a sudden you found the adrenaline you needed to be able to have a little bit more, because once you turn into Boylston Street, it seems like it should be like nothing to get to the finish line. But no matter how many times I run, it seems like somebody's moving the finish line. It's like the goalposts are moving. They're getting further away. They're not getting closer, man. So, you know, like obviously people have their favorite side. Do they want to run the right? Do they have family on the left? You want to run in the middle for a picture. Pick your side where you want to be. Where are your family and friends at? But man, get the crowds into it, man. These crowds will fire you up, man. And you can fire them right back up. And not just you, other runners who are around you, man. So tap into that out there on the course, and right?
Even if it's like, I wasn't waving or anything like that when I was running them, but I'd run right next to the crowd in those points and just, you take it all in, the loud crowds, maybe slap a high five to a little kid or something. But even if you just run right next to them and you just take it all in, you're going to have goosebumps with how loud it is in that section.
Oh, heck yeah, man. Heck yeah. And Boylston is just like, it's so iconic. It just, you know, what an amazing experience we get to have. And, you know, when we cross that line and, you know, all the structures that are built, you know, the overhangs and the photographers everywhere. And, you know, our friends all along the left and the right side, somebody's always out there getting a shot, getting a video. And that's just like such a blessing, because, you know, when I look back to the 100th marathon, I had like three pictures from the race that day. You know, it's like three or four. And if you remember, they used to be those little clips, It'd be like a 35 millimeter clip and they send it to you. It's still same company, you know, it's still them, you know, after all these years. But my God, have things changed, because, you know, we could get hundreds of photos from a race, sometimes even more. And, you know, back then we might get three or four, and maybe your finish line shot, the only thing you saw is you were looking at your watch and you're like, oh no, I don't even have a shot from the Boston Marathon. So make sure, you know, if you're going to have your phone out there, man, get some shots, man, get some shots when you're scaling Heartbreak, or, you know, turning at the Firehouse or other iconic sections, or wherever your friends or family might be. And because not everybody's running for an awesome time. Maybe you're running for charity and you raised a lot of money and you're going to run past, you know, American Heart Association or Boston Children's or whatever organization you're running for, American Cancer Society, man, if they're out there and you're not running for time, man, stop in there and give them a hug, man, give them some love, take some selfies with the people that are out there, you know, cheering for you, because, man, you'll appreciate it after the fact, you know, to have those memories. And so will they, because they've been out there all day cheering for you, me, and us. And, you know, just say thanks, man. It's a way to say thanks to the people on the course, as well as obviously all the amazing volunteers, right?
Yeah, definitely. Just do what suits you best. Like you said, if you're running for a time, you can be focused, but you can still be taking in the crowds, taking in the sights. And if it's something where you're not caring as much about the time, take the selfies, take that, just because it's a special race and a special course, and you're out there doing it for your goal. So no one else's goal. So if your goal is to have fun on it. If your goal is to go for a personal best, go for the personal best.
Yeah. And look, one thing I always talk about in the tech side too, because like people, we all have our approach to training, right? We all have our approach to how we fuel our long runs and how we've, you know, tackled certain bits of training with you as, let's say, a coach. And, you know, runners like build playlists. It's like their single most important thing that they're going to rely on. So I'm not going to like give any hate to somebody who wants to run with music and headphones or something that's going to help them really get into the zone and rally at points in the race. But what I always encourage people, man, if you're going to listen to tunes, totally cool. But think about maybe just wearing one headphone versus two, because you can still hear your music out of one ear. And you can still hear the crowds. And more importantly, you might have friends blowing by you, patting you on the arm. And, you know, if you didn't even hear them, they might have yelled something to you or you know, giving you some love or a cheer. Or maybe friends that are lining the course might be yelling your name and you might not even hear them. So you might want to just think about it. You're going to go with tunes. You're going to roll with it. Cool. But, you know, if you haven't ever run with one earphone, probably not a good idea to do it in Boston, because then all of a sudden, if you have no music and you have the worst race of your life, I don't want to hear everybody come back and say that asshole talked me into running with one headphone. So, you know, like anything else, that has to be practiced too, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, last piece, let's leave. We covered the course A to Z every way you can. Let's just a little bit just on like nutrition. So just a little bit for fueling. Everybody's got an approach. We know there's going to be. You know, what do we have? Gatorade and water on the course, and we have Morton, right, for our gels, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we have as far as on the course. Everybody's going to approach this race differently. If you are the kind of person who sweats a lot and maybe has to worry about salt or maybe cramping late, there's 9 million kinds of really tasty, chewable salt tablets out there. You can pack a couple of them in like a little plastic baggie, put it in your waist belt or wherever you carry your fuels. Think about that, because Boston, Brendan, of all the courses out there, I think Boston is the course that causes more people to cramp because of the constant changing of direction. Yeah. And then also, after you've been pummeled with a lot of downhills, then you're going uphill. You just see so many people on the side of the road cramping, and you see them with calf stuff or maybe even hamstring stuff. So I always like to at least mention it to people. And again, if you've never, ever used them in your life, you've never had an issue, you know, not saying it's the time to throw it in, but if you had issues with cramping, you know, there's also pickle juice. There's all sorts of other products and things that you might want to throw in there late that could help you. But just think about having what you need while you're out on the course. It's not that hard to wear a good waist belt where you can store 6 to 8 gels and have even candy. Some people want to go with candy, man. My favorite thing in the world late in the race from 22 to 23 on would be a bottle of Coke, a can of Coca-Cola. And a lot of people in the ultra world defizz it. You know, they'll shake the bottle up and get the fizz out. I don't mind the fizz. I don't care. Like, I actually like it having the fizz in it. So whatever it is that, you know, is going to help power you and keep you moving, just think about it and think about where your friends can meet you on the course and maybe hand you off a bottle. or your favorite snack or something that you might need that could get you home in the late moments of the race, right?
Yeah, have your nutrition plan ahead of time. Don't just wing it on race day. You never want to, as we always say, try something new, anything like that. You also don't want to do, say your running buddy's doing this and you say, I'm going to do that too. Do what works for you in your past races and things like that. Because I know people say you take a gel every 5K, every time, but I know for me personally, I was a gel person every 35 to 40 minutes, a little longer. I just could conserve fuel a little better than other people. But because that worked for me, it doesn't mean everyone else should be doing that. So it's basically what has worked for you in the past. I think a safe way is every 30 minutes or so, roughly, but most people can work on that. And I always like to tell people, or like to plan it out, that try taking it as the water stop is approaching. So you see the water stop ahead of you, start opening the gel, slowly take the gel. You don't have to do it all at once. You can hold it as you're running, and that water can help wash it down too, because sometimes that can get stuck in your mouth and cause some issues too. So planning it around the water split stops can be very helpful.
Yeah, it's a great tip, because again, you have the right aid station, then you have the left. So they're always broken up. Yeah. They're not going to be in the same exact spot. So if you're get up all of a sudden, there's an aid station on the right and you haven't had your gel yet, that can be your trigger reminder. Like, okay, I need to get a gel in. Well, you have time. You still got a couple hundred feet. You know, even if you slow up a little bit, look, if you're not going for PRs again, there's nothing wrong with, like, you know, maybe jogging or even walking through an aid station to make sure you get your fuel down. Or maybe you're even mixing your own drink. I know people do that these days. They're carrying their own water bottles and all sorts of stuff, and they're going to use, you know, whatever it is that they're using for fuel that's out there, because it's better on their stomach. They've had good experiences with it. And that's what we want, man. We want people to have a good race out there. We want them to enjoy the experience. So that's basically it. I'm trying to think. I answered as many questions as I saw come in. We didn't really get that many. But here's the thing. This Instagram post will stay up. The Instagram live will stay up. The video will be up. So you can share this Instagram live once I post this thing after we finish here. You can share it with any of your friends on Instagram. They can see it after the fact. They don't have to have watched it live with us. They can ask questions. I will add Brendan as a collaborator on the post, O'Leary Racing Team. That's Brendan's Instagram handle, O'Leary Racing Team. So it'll go to his page. It'll go to my page. So if you write a comment on his page or my page, it won't make any difference. It shows up in both of our pages. So you can get an answer to a question. If you say something was helpful, that's wonderful, but it's not necessary. If it was, that's fantastic. And last but not least, probably a week from now or so, this will also release as a podcast if you prefer audio. So that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other places where you get your downloads from for a podcast. You'll be able to hear this, listen to it on audio, and check it out. So that's basically it from us. I thank you all so much for joining. Brendan, thank you for being the expert guest here with me and hanging out with me. And our dogs joined the party a little bit too. So I'll get this up, I don't know, probably in 30 minutes or so. And that's basically it. Wait, I might have one more question here. Hold on a second. Let me see. Let's see. Okay. Oh, it's Kathy Taylor who had the other question. She said, thank you. Great info. So fantastic. So I'm glad you enjoyed it. Melissa right there says, thank you. That's great. Michael Gordon was waving. My good buddy, Michael Gordon. Kathy Taylor says, thank you. We had a bunch of ORT people, you know, kind of join in and out. And the same thing goes, Brendan. I'm trying to think if there's a way I could save this for you after, if you wanted to put it on your Facebook page. I'm not really sure. I'll try to figure that out.
I'll get the pod when you do it.
Too, okay.
So
cool.
That works. And if anyone downloads the guide that you're going to, if you have a question on it, just holler out to me. I'll get back to you quickly.
Yes.
Because I know we skipped over some of it because we could have gone on all day.
Did.
So on the mile by mile, if there's something you're not sure of or it doesn't make sense or you have a question on it, just shoot me a question. And I'll get back to you.
That's a great idea, because you sent me the PDF for it the other day. So I can just post that or link to the PDF and just put your information and my information and just say, hey, because they can literally read that and go that approach as opposed to with the audio and listening. Me, I'm a person I want to take it from every way I can. If I can read it, see it, like a YouTube guide on the Tokyo course, I love that stuff. It's like visually, I get an idea what it looks like, but then I can see the graphics and somebody there is saying, I feel better prepared. Thank you. Gail Miranda 60. Wonderful. Nothing makes us happier than that. So thank you for joining. Please share with your friends, Gail. O'Leary Racing Team, I know Brendan, all your people will do that, and everybody else. So thanks all of you for joining, and basically we're gonna say our peace out over here, and move on. And that'll be that. So hope to see all of you up. Come to Brendan Shakeout. Come on Sunday to the Shakeout. You can meet me. You can meet Brendan. We can hang out and get some selfies. And we'll wish you luck for the race. So everybody, have a great race in Boston. Have a great experience. And we'll see you up there, okay?